vielleicht zum Herzen gedacht, über deinen Tod schreiben wir in Heaven. Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gaurvani Pracharne, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschitya Desitarne. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivastri Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Should I read a verse from Bhagavad Gita? Did we bring my tablet? No. Could I have a Bhagavad Gita? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So what verse should we read, devotees? Tell me. What verse should we read? Who would like to choose a verse? See, what verse should we read?
Chapter 3, text 15.
Chapter 3, verse 15. Sounds interesting. Oh, okay. All right. Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 3, Karma Yoga, Text 15. It's okay. Right. It's very philosophical. You know, I've been coming to Maybank for about 40 years. Yeah, actually, about getting on for 40 years. And the devotees in Maybank are very philosophically minded. I've had that experience. Okay, here we go. Chapter 3, Karma Yoga, verse 15. Karma Brahmod Bhavam Vidhi Brahmakshara Samud Bhavam Tasmat Sarva Gatam Brahma Nityam Yagye Pratishtitam. Translation. Regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. So let's read the purport by Srila Prabhupada. Yagyarta karma, or the necessity of work for the satisfaction of Krishna alone, is more expressly stated in this verse. If we have to work for the satisfaction of the Yajna Purusha, Vishnu, then we must find out the direction of work in Brahma, or the transcendental Vedas. The Vedas are therefore codes of working directions. Anything performed without the direction of the Vedas is called vikarma, or unauthorized or sinful work. Therefore, one should always take direction from the Vedas to be saved from the reaction of work. As one has to work in ordinary life by the direction of the state, one similarly has to work under direction of the supreme state of the Lord. Such directions in the Vedas are directly manifested from the breathing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is said, Asya mahato bhutasya nishvasitam etad yad rigvedo yajurveda samavedo atarvangirasa, which means the four Vedas, namely the Rigveda, Yajurveda, Samaveda, and Atharvaveda, are all emanations from the breathing of the great personality of Godhead. And that is the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.5.11. The Lord, being omnipotent, can speak by breathing air. For, as it is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, the Lord has the omnipotence to perform through each of his senses the actions of all other senses. In other words, the Lord can speak through his breathing, and he can impregnate by his eyes. In fact, it is said that he glanced over material nature and thus fathered all living entities. After creating or impregnating the conditioned souls into the womb of material nature, he gave his directions in the Vedic wisdom as to how such conditioned souls can return home back to Godhead. We should always remember that the conditioned souls in material nature are all eager for material enjoyment. But the Vedic directions are so made that one can satisfy one's perverted desires, then return to Godhead, having finished his so-called enjoyment. It is a chance for the conditioned souls to attain liberation. Therefore, the conditioned souls must try to follow the process of yajna by becoming Krishna conscious. Even those who have not followed the Vedic injunctions may adopt the principles of Krishna consciousness, and that will take the place of performance of Vedic yajnas or karmas. Let me read the verse again. Karma brahmod bhavam vidhi brahmakshara samud bhavam tasmat sarvam gatam brahma nityam yajye pratishtitam. regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas. And the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasada Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pujayani Nirvishesha Nivari Pasta Chadish Hare Krishna. Well, devotees, it's really nice to be here with you all. I hope you're happy in Krishna consciousness. I forget when I was here last. Do you remember? Was it last year? Or the year before? Was it last year? Year before, maybe. Something like that. Yeah. No, but Mirbank is very nice. I like Mirbank. I remember some of our tent campaigns in Mirbank. They were really nice. Really nice. Anyway, this is an important verse in Bhagavad Gita. And, well, as we said, it's very philosophical. A little complicated. Not too much, maybe, but a little. The way it puts it is the all-pervading transcendence is situated and can be found in acts of sacrifice. What is that all-pervading transcendence? Well, ultimately, it is Krishna. Krishna. If we're looking for Krishna, I don't know if you've heard me say, I've said a number of times, that a couple of years ago, I was in Mauritius, and we just arrived, flew in that late afternoon or early evening, and we went to the devotee's house, where we're going to stay, and they had a little kirtan, little program. Some devotees were assembled there, and then everyone was being introduced. Well, some of the people I didn't know, so the devotees whose house it was, they were introducing these devotees, this is such and such, this is such and such. And like that, I was meeting these devotees. And then the leader said, introducing one young fellow, he's like 21 or 2 or 3. He said, and this is Krishna. And I said to Krishna, I said, really? I've been looking for you for a long time. He wasn't that Krishna, though. The big one from up there. He was some other Krishna. What to do? Anyway. But Krishna, if we're looking for Krishna, if people are looking for God, then where to find him, how to find him? We're living here in the material world, and it's a very impure place. It's a very impure place. Oh, there's a lot of sinful activity. There's a lot of violence, and you know, there's a lot of cheating. and all sorts of problems. Now we have the coronavirus. You heard about that one? Who would have expected, after everything else, then along comes the coronavirus and it's throwing the whole world just totally upside down. Oh well, anyway, but the thing is, as the verse says, the all-pervading transcendence or Krishna can be found in acts of sacrifice, through acts of sacrifice, but in acts of sacrifice. When Krishna is using the word sacrifice, he's not necessarily meaning like a fire yajna. Not necessarily. Of course, it can be also. But not necessarily. And more generally, sacrifice means when we do something for the pleasure of the Lord. You could have done it for yourself. You know, like a simple example, you cooked some food, but then you offer it to Krishna. You sacrifice it for Krishna. You could have just eaten it yourself, just like that. Most people do. But for a devotee or a pious person, or particularly for the devotees, they offer it to Krishna. Here, Krishna, you have it. Yes, so like this, through offering things in sacrifice, this is generally, for most people, the easiest way to perform yajna or sacrifice. If you want to do some fire yajna, you know, ceremonial performance, kind of like a ritualistic performance, it's not so easy. You have to know all the mantras. Many mantras. You have to know all the mantras. You have to know the procedure. Otherwise, you can make it just a mess of it. And let me tell you one story about yajna, which I first heard in Mirbank. Seriously. In, I think, 1980, maybe 81, but not later than 81. More likely, actually, in 1980, I arrived in January. And Parthasarathy Maharaj was doing the 10th campaign. Many of you would remember that. And so he was doing it here in Mirbank. And anyway, the story came up. I heard it in Mirbank. And it illustrates at least one aspect of how it's difficult and why it's difficult to do these, you know, the very old traditional fire sacrifices, unless you really know what you're doing, which is not easy to know. So anyway, they told the story. There was a young fellow, means like teenage or 20, and his father was a priest, a Hindu priest. And the boy, the father, wanted the boy to also become a Hindu priest. So he was going to do one of these fire sacrifices. And he told the son, "You watch what I'm doing, and you'll learn." So he did this and that and chanted and you know, lit a fire, and he was doing things and offering things and chanting things. And what should happen but a cat came in? You probably know the story just by the mention of the cat. I think it's a famous story. And the cat, you know, the father, there he is, he's sitting there doing the yajna and so on. And the cat came over and sort of rubbed against him. So the father stopped the yajna, stood up, picked up the cat, took it one side, and tied it up, and carried on. So then, shortly after the father died, and the son had to take up that program. This is how the family made a living. So, okay, so he got his first engagement to do a yajna for some family. Okay, so he sat down and he arranged everything, because he had written down what his father had been doing. So he sat down and he started chanting some mantras, and he built a bit of a fire and he lit it, and things are going on, and his mother was there, and he reached a certain point and he said, "Ma, where's the cat? Bring the cat." And mother brought the cat, and he tied the cat up one side. Yes. You follow the idea. You heard the story before. You must have. It's famous. It's a Meerbank story. From down by the oil refinery, I think, or somewhere like that. So, you know, it was just a nonsense, though, because the cat bothered the father. It wasn't part of the program. It was just some distraction. But the boy thought, "Oh, we need a cat. It's part of the yajna." So, yeah. Anyway, it's not easy to do that sort of thing. You know, even, you know, I've been practicing Krishna consciousness for a while. And occasionally I've done these fire sacrifices. But when I do, I have to get the list of instructions, because it's complicated. But, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you know, chapter 9, verse 26, Patram Pushpam Palam Tvayam Yome Bhaktya Prayachati Tadaham Bhaktya Paritam Ashnami Prayatapana. If you offer me with love and devotion a leaf, flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. This is also a type of sacrifice. Yajna, because the fruit, you know, maybe you get one banana. Now we offer it to Krishna. You could always just take the banana yourself and just eat it. But no, the devotees, they will offer it. They'll offer it to Krishna. It's a type of sacrifice. Instead of just eating it like that, you offer it. It's an act. It's like a gesture of sacrifice. So it's easy to do. Even a child can do it, actually. There are different ways of offering food. On the altar in the Radharadhanath temple in Chatsworth, they offer food 6 times a day, and it's a little complicated. You've got to know different mantras. And there's a whole way of doing it. It takes about 20 minutes. But at home, at least the most simple way, you can just take some fruit or whatever, some food, vegetarian food, place it in front of a picture of the Lord, and just chant the Hare Krishna mantra a few times. That's like the simplest way. You can also chant, there are a few other mantras you can chant, but in the very simplest way, you just put it there, you just chant Hare Krishna, and it's very simple, but it's a type of offering which a child can do. Just a young child can do that. It's really not difficult at all. So, and in that way, through offering to Krishna, remembering the Lord, thinking of the Lord, and offering it with that mood, "Hear my Lord, this is for you," then Krishna is there. And Krishna will accept it. Krishna will accept it. And Krishna will appreciate that you've made that effort to offer, and he will give you some mercy. In that way, you'll come, every time you do it, you come a little closer to Krishna. Yeah, it's very nice. So, but a very interesting thing which Prabhupada mentions briefly in the purport, is that even in ordinary life of just the ordinary people who are working at the oil refinery, for example, or just working anywhere in some job, in a factory, or just in a shop, or anything. These ordinary people, by working in order to get money to live, they are making a sacrifice, in a certain sense of the term. That means that they're going to the place of work. Generally, they go a little early in the morning, 7 o'clock they leave home, or 7:30. Maybe they have to be at work at 8. And then they're there, working hard, doing this and doing that, and being instructed by the boss. And working hard all day, maybe till 5 o'clock. This is normal, isn't it? This is very normal in everyday life. And they use up their energy, and maybe they have to think, what am I doing? How to do it? So they're using mental energy. And therefore, oftentimes when people come home from work, they're tired, isn't it? Oftentimes, they come back and it's like, whew, what a day. And when they wake up on Saturday morning and they realize, oh, I don't have to go to work, it's like, oh, what a relief. Yes. So, in other words, by going to work and giving their energy and their mental energy and
so many hours, every day, 5 days, maybe 6 days in a week. They could have used that time for just relaxing. They could have gone down to the beach and relaxed, or gone and visited someone and relaxed. But no, they gave that time. They gave that energy. It's a type of sacrifice. You follow the idea? It's a type of sacrifice. Giving, offering your energy, your mental energy, your time, your physical strength. It's a type of sacrifice because you could have used it in some other way, much more enjoyable way. You know, I remember just shortly before I became a devotee, I joined in England, but at that time, just before, I was still in New Zealand where I was born and raised. And one day, it was 1972, one day in April, Srila Prabhupada came to the university and he gave a lecture and had kirtan and everything. And I just happened to be in the right place at the right time, and I saw Prabhupada. Prabhupada was actually the first devotee I saw. So I stayed and listened to the program. It wasn't easy to understand, but anyway, I stayed and listened. And then after that, like in the days and weeks and few months following that, I had this amazing experience. When I would go to the university and when I would go home from the university, the university in Auckland is right by the center of the city, a few hundred meters from the main street. And I would take the bus, and I'd have to walk up the main street to get to the university from the bus station, and in the afternoon walk down through the main street. And I had this experience. I'd see all these working people going here and going there and busy. And it just became clear to me, I got this realization, they are not doing it because they want to, because it's nice, because it's fun. They're doing it because they have to. You know what I mean? I'm sure you know what I mean. Because they have to. Because if they don't do it, they won't get money. And sooner or later, they'll starve to death or something like that. Their lives will just fall to pieces. So I could see it's a sacrifice. It's not like a religious sacrifice. But it is a type of sacrifice of time and energy and thought. So my point here, and it's a point which Prabhupada mentioned just very briefly in the purport, that in this world, people cannot live without doing some type of sacrifice, even if it's just the sacrifice of your time and energy going to the factory or going and working. That's the way this material world is. That in order to get by, you have to make sacrifice. So of course, just working like the ordinary people, it's a sacrifice, but it's a very you know, very surface level. It's not a very deep type of sacrifice. It's not a sacrifice in which you find God through working in the factory. You find God? Not really. Through working in the factory, you find some money. You get some money, that's all. But here now, in this verse, Lord Krishna, and there's a number of verses around here where this whole discussion is developed. But the point is that we should do sacrifice for the Supreme Lord, for Lord Krishna. And if we do that, well, through doing that, by doing that, we will find the Lord. And while we're doing it, in the activity itself, we will find the presence of the Lord. And we'll gradually realize that Krishna is there when I do these things, offering my food, offering some money, doing some physical active service, like going to the temple, doing some service here, setting up the altar. This altar is not here 7 days a week, 24/7. The devotees have to bring it and set it up and put the pictures and the flowers and the nice lighting arrangement. It's quite something, isn't it? It's nice. So that's some effort is being made in the service of the Lord. It's a type of sacrifice. And it's a lot easier than trying to do some hava. Yeah, which is not easy. So, yes, so of course we know in the Kali Yuga, the prescribed sacrifice is the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. In the different ages, there are different activities for realizing the Lord. There's a verse in the 11th canto, Kriteyad Dhyayato Vishnu Tretayam Yajato Makai Dwarparam Paracharyavam Kalo Tad Harikirtanat. So it's saying, the first line, Kriteyad Dhyayato Vishnu, in the Krita Yuga, which is just another name for Satya Yuga. Yeah. In that first age, then the prescribed activity, or even just the popular activity for God realization was Dhyayato Vishnum, to meditate silently on Vishnu, just in the mind, in the heart. No sound vibration, no effort, it's just mental. But then in the next stage, Treta Yuga, Tretayam Yajato Makai, Yaja or Yajna, the performance of fire sacrifice was the recommended or popular way of approaching the Lord and realizing the Lord. And therefore it was extremely common in those days. Extremely common. Every day there would be many fire sacrifices going on. But you know, to do those sacrifices properly, so you actually get the result, that you want or that you're meant to get from that type of sacrifice. You have to do it expertly. You know, particularly, you have to chant the mantras perfectly. You cannot even mispronounce one syllable. Otherwise, it will probably be a failure. You know, there's a very interesting example. It is quite amazing. In Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 6th canto, I don't know how many of you have read or are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, but please do, because it is just like a gold mine of nectar, of information, and just very stimulating things. So in the 6th canto, it's a bit of a long story, but one person, his name was Twashta, his one son was killed by Lord Indra. I'm sure you've heard of Lord Indra, the king of heaven, one of the chief demigods. So Indra killed the son of Twashta. And Twashta, he wanted revenge. He wanted revenge. So what he did, he arranged for a big havan to be done. Big fire yajna, havan to be done. And in that big havan, the mantras would be chanted for producing from the fire a person who could kill Indra, would emerge from the fire. So they did it. This big, serious fire sacrifice with these mantras being chanted, stating that we want someone from this fire who can kill Indra. Or the specific language they used was, we want someone who will be the enemy of Indra. It's a nice way of saying, we want someone who can kill Indra. You say, we want someone who will be the enemy of Indra. But they mispronounced one syllable. Enemy of Indra is Indra in Sanskrit. Indra Shatraho. Shatraho. That last syllable is doubled. Oho. Indra Shatraho. That means the enemy of Indra. But whoever was chanting the mantras mispronounced one syllable. Instead of Indra Shatraho, he said Indra Shatro. No doubling. You follow him? No oho, just o. But when you say Indra Shatro without the double syllable, you know what it means? It means someone who Indra is the enemy of. You follow? In other words, someone who Indra can kill. Just one syllable. So from the fire, if you're familiar with the Bhagavatam, with the 6th canto, from the fire came a great demon who was named Vritrasura. And it's a really long story. But basically, you know, in this regard at least, he went to fight with Indra, because that was like his business. He went to fight with Indra. And of course he's meant to kill Indra, but Indra killed him, because he was not the enemy of Indra, but rather Indra was his enemy. So it took a long time, and it wasn't easy, but eventually Indra killed him. So, you know, when you're doing this type of activity, it's really very particular. You've got to be really precise. Sure. It's not just that any one of us can get up and just do it just like that by any means. Anyway, we're talking about the different ages. In Satya Yuga, silent meditation on Vishnu. Treta Yuga, this type of havan, fire sacrifice. Dwaparam Paracharyavam means, in Dwapara Yuga, deity worship. But then the last line says, Kalo in Kali Yuga, Tad basically means that, or the same thing. The same thing can be achieved through Hari Kirtana, through Hari Kirtan, Krishna Kirtan, chanting the holy names of the Lord. So yeah, that's why, you know, that's why we emphasize so much the chanting. That's why we call the Hare Krishna movement. You know, if you ask anyone if they've heard of the Hare Krishna movement, you know, I think the vast majority will say, of course. If you ask them, have you heard of ISKCON, which is our official name, many of them will say, what? Or even, you know, have you heard of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness? Some of them may think and say, oh, you mean Hare Krishna? Because it's not actually our name of the organization. But we just do it so much, everyone knows us like that. Indrajumana Maharaj was telling us a while ago, actually. He was in Siberia, and he landed at one airport way out in eastern Russia. It's another world. So he was there in the airport, and there was an elderly man who was sweeping the airport. It's like an elderly man from the communist times. So this man walked up to him, to Indrajumana Maharaj, and in Russian, of course, but Maharaj had a translator, he asked, who are you? What are you? Are you Buddhist? Are you Buddhist? And Maharaj said, no, 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 I'm Hare Krishna. And the man said, oh, Hare Krishna. Oh, I see. And Maharaj, you know, this is an obscure kind of remote place. It's an old man from the communist times. Maharaj asked him, oh, you heard of Hare Krishna? Like, have you heard of Hare Krishna? A bit surprised. And the man became sort of like slightly offended. Of course I've heard of Hare Krishna, he said. Of course I've heard of Hare Krishna. You think I'm stupid? But if you ask him, you heard of ISKCON? What? International Society for Krishna Consciousness? Who? Oh, you mean Hare Krishna? Yeah. So that, you know, we emphasize and we do so much. And the thing is, if we do it nicely, if we chant nicely, then we will experience Krishna in our chanting, as we are chanting. We will feel the presence of Krishna. And, well, the presence, and we will feel the influence of Krishna while we're chanting. That, you know, at least if we chant nicely, you know, if we're just sort of chanting away and watching television or, you know, reading the newspaper and chanting, then you won't get so much experience, if any. But if you sit down and you really try to focus and you chant nicely, or in the kirtan, we'll have kirtan shortly, if you really try and chant and hear the chanting and chant nicely, then your state of mind will change and you'll feel it very clearly. You'll feel it change as while you are chanting. And that is the influence of Krishna, who is present in his names. You know, typically if we chant nicely, then the mind, if we have some anxieties from work or from whatever things are going on in life, from the coronavirus, if we're in anxiety a little bit, but then we chant nicely and we hear nicely the chanting, then in a little while, quite quickly, the anxiety will go. Yes. The mind will sort of clear. And we'll start feeling nice. And we can start feeling very nice indeed. These are common experiences of so many devotees. We couldn't say how many. Because they are finding Krishna in the chanting. They're experiencing the presence and the influence of Krishna in their chanting, which is a type of sacrifice. Because instead of chanting, you could always be talking about anything. Just how are you, and what's happening, and what's the news. You could be using your sound capacity for anything else, but now you're using it, you are sacrificing. It's like vocal sacrifice to glorify Krishna. Hare Krishna. Yes, so it's a service, it's a sacrifice to Krishna. And you find Krishna in it. And the more you do it, the more you find the presence of the Lord. And it's very simple. Anyone can do it. A child can do it. Even in many cases, people who don't even know what it is, they don't understand it. It's just some, they think it's some, the Hare Krishna song. Like when I was young, George Harrison of the Beatles, he helped the devotees make the Hare Krishna record. It was a record, and it was in the top 10 all over the world. In New Zealand, it was in the top 10. You know, I was at the time like 18, 19 or something like that. And I was a Hit Parade fan. And me and all my friends, we knew the Hare Krishna song. And many people, they became stimulated by it. They thought it was amazing, even though they had no idea what is it, what does it mean, what's it about. Nothing. It's just, you know, it's from India. George Harrison likes it. Oh, it must be good. So there you go. As Krishna says here, the all-pervading transcendence is situated in acts of sacrifice. And for us, of course, there's so many services we can do, but particularly the chanting is always the most important thing. And we can find Krishna there. Hare Krishna! Srila Prabhupada ki. Let's see. Oh, it's early. Good. That's nice. So what now? Kirtan. Okay. Guru Puja Kirtan or just Kirtan Kirtan?
You could do Guru Puja Kirtan.
Do the Guru Puja song. And we offer flowers. Okay. All right, devotees, let's stand up for that Guru Puja.